Thanks for listening to one of our messages at Crossroads Bible Church. We gather on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. in person and online. To find out more about our church or to connect to any of our ministries, visit our website at crossroadsbible.org. We hope you enjoy the message and pray it encourages you as you seek to follow Jesus.
Good morning. Let's just get this out of the way. I know I'm dressed like it's Easter, and I apologize, okay? I got dressed in the dark this morning, and I didn't want to wake my wife up, and I should have just turned the lights on, but it is what it is. We're just going to have to accept it. Easter's good, right? So this is like a preaching costume. To dress like Easter is fine. I'm the youth pastor, and that's why I'm a little weird. God built me in such a way that I can relate to teenagers, and so I'm different. And that's just something I have to embrace in my life. I am. I'm Nick. I'm the youth pastor. And I want to tell you guys, I feel like I say this every once in a while when I come up here, but I just really love what I do. I really, 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 really do. I have a very unique opportunity to see a very different side of this church community. For example, I was just downstairs because I also volunteer to do kids men worship. I lead worship during the school year. For the kids in the kids' men room. And there is something so unique and special about those very quick glimpses. And I don't know if any of you have ever noticed this before. Maybe in your own children, you've seen it. Those quick glimpses that you see in a kid's eyes when they connect with God. I think children are probably the closest ones that are the ones that are most easily able to connect with God because they're so much like him. And it's just really beautiful to get that quick glimpse of like watching a child who is singing a song understand in a brief moment why they're doing it. It is glorious. It is a unique glimpse into heaven. And it's very similar with like a teenager. To watch a 14-year-old little boy make a connection to the God of the universe, it's a unique experience. And I'm very blessed that I get to do that on a regular basis. And it is one of the great joys of my life to get to do that. And I say all that to say, bring us your middle school and high school kids, man. We want them. There is a large team of adults in this church that love students just as much, if not more, than I do. And we are greatly committed to watching and bringing those students into a deep relationship with Jesus. So bring them to us. You know, we start back on August 16th on Wednesday night, and I'd love to meet them. I'd love to see them. Bring us your kids because we want to hang out with them and teach them who Jesus is. It's an amazing and strange job. And one of the questions that comes up a lot in youth ministry circles or just in church circles in general is how do you measure the quality of a youth pastor or a youth ministry? How do you measure whether or not it's good? So I'll give you a clue. It's not about numbers. It's not about numbers. Because the trick to having a large youth group is having a large budget. It's really that simple. If you've got $80,000 a year to build a youth ministry, you can get fancy lights and you can get a big stage and you can pay expensive musicians to come and you can do huge events. And kids will come to that. It's easy. That doesn't mean it's a great youth ministry. It means it's a wealthy youth ministry, which is also fun. I've done that. It's fun. It's fun to give away Xbox Ones every time you bring, to have a raffle for big things every time students come. That's a great way to build your numbers. Doesn't really matter whether or not it's a quality youth ministry. That's not the question. The question is not how to build a great, how to build a large youth ministry, how to build a good one. So what does it mean to have a good youth ministry? It's funny because where many of you work, there are established metrics, right? There are ways to look and say, is Aaron doing a good job? There are ways to look. What's his sales output? Does he show up to work on time? How much money is he bringing in? And if he's doing well in all of those, you can point and say, Aaron's a good worker. He is doing a good job. He's a good bank software salesman. Or, this is more fun, right? You can look at like athletes. Athletes, it's so easy to tell if they're good or if they're bad. For example, Lionel Messi, the greatest soccer player that's ever lived, just came to America right? He just showed up and scored a goal in his very first game. It was crazy. It was in like the last minute too. It was very dramatic. I'm sure all of you were watching it because you're big soccer fans like me. I don't know why you're laughing. You should have watched it. It's awesome. There's no football on anyway. Just watch soccer. It's kind of the same. It's called the same thing outside the country, so you might as well, you can just tell people you're watching football and it'll feel similar. No, this is cool. So he, Lionel Messi, the greatest soccer player that's ever lived, he has scored professionally 808 times. 808 goals in 1,029 games. He has scored 808 times. And if you're a math whiz, you know that that means every time he steps on the field, there's a 79% chance that he's going to score a goal. And maybe that doesn't sound very good. Let me give you something to compare it to. The greatest soccer player that America has ever put out there, his name is Landon Donovan. He has scored 245 times in 642 games. That means his number is 38%. It's the greatest player America has ever produced, not even half what our boy Messi did. Now, I know you're concerned that America is just not putting out the right kind of players. I'm on it. I'm coaching, okay? My son scored a few goals last season, and so give us 7 or 8 years, and it'll be fixed. I've got a plan. I'm going to fix it. Don't be that concerned. No, it is. It's hard to measure a youth pastor's quality. You can look at salvations. Problem there is it's actually not that hard to convince people to be saved because you just have to use fear and pressure. It's not that hard. I've done it. It makes you feel good for a minute, and then you realize, whoops, that wasn't a good idea. Fear and pressure can create salvation. Doesn't mean you have a good youth ministry. Is it number of students? We already covered that. Cool hairstyles. Youth pastors are known for having cool hairstyles. I'm kind of stuck. I got one left, and this is it. I just want to give you some advice. If you're losing your hair, don't look back at pictures of yourself from when you were 20. It's sad. It's disheartening. I don't like it. I have one hanging in my office. I need to take it down. It makes me sad. The thing is, nobody really knows how to do it. Nobody really knows how to measure the quality of a youth ministry. There is some stuff out there that's really interesting. One of the things that I really like is this. If I were to disappear tomorrow, would the youth ministry continue to function at the same level? That's a good way to measure it. And here's why. It can't be about me. Can't be about my quality as a youth pastor. It can't be about how good a teacher I am. It can't be about the number of tattoos I have. It can't be about how magnetic I might be. Can't be about that. It's not about me. Conversely, if the reason that students don't come is because of me, that's a problem for a different reason. It's a problem because I'm making the youth ministry about me, and that's not good. That's not the makings of a quality youth ministry. It needs to be good without me. Am I making it about me? Is a question that if I want to run a good youth ministry program, I need to be asking often. And in the same way, today, the name that we are looking at, the name of God, is called Yahweh Makadesh, which, as I'm sure you all know, means, I am the Lord who sanctifies you. Being sanctified, it's really not about you. It's really not about your output. It's really not about you. It is about what God can do with you if you surrender yourself to him. That's what Yahweh Makadesh is all about. I am the Lord who sanctifies you. Another word for sanctify is another way to describe that word is to be set apart. We tend to use the word holy a lot. That's the word that we use that basically means the same thing. I am the Lord who makes holy. I am the Lord who sets apart. And that's what we're going to dive in a little bit today is this idea of being set apart and how it is God's work, not ours. So being set apart. Let's talk about that. Is that something we really want? I don't think it's a definite yes. I think there's some trepidation in the idea of being set apart because it's dangerous. It's dangerous to be set apart to be made different, to be made to look different, to be made to seem different, to be made to not really fit in, that's a little scary. That can be dangerous. There is a long history in our country and in our world of persecution and violence coming on those who are set apart. You know, Jesus described it this way. He's praying to the Father and he's saying, I have given them your word and the world has hated them because they're not of the world, just as I am not. We don't want to be hated. Nobody wants to be hated. Being set apart is a tough situation. It's not easy. And those of us that would say, I don't care, I want to be set apart, I don't know that you truly know what it means. I don't know that you truly get the intensity of what that looks like. I think what we want, if we really want to talk about it, is I think we want the benefits of holiness without having to be set apart. I think we want the benefits of holiness like respect, admiration, honor, love, and all those other things without having to actually be different. I know that there's something in my heart that says that. We want to be set apart, but we don't. We want the benefits of holiness, but we don't want the consequences. All throughout Scripture, in the history of the church, you can watch God actively trying to set apart people that want to be part of the herd. You can actively see him trying to set apart people who are desperate to climb back into the womb. Here's the truth. The kingdom of God is a set apart place for a set apart people. And our destiny is to be made holy, to be made sanctified, to be set apart. This is where we're going. If you are on the path of a follower of Jesus, a Christian, you are on the path of sanctification. You are on the path of being set apart. That's just what's happening. That is the work that God is doing in you. He is trying to set you apart. So we need to embrace that, and we need to figure out how to do it. So looking at the story of Israel in the Old Testament, the whole point of the promised land was to give Yahweh's chosen people a place of their own where he could sanctify them. In Genesis 12, 1-3, he talks to Abraham, and he says, go from your country to the land that I will show you, and I will make of you a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great so that you will be a blessing, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. The promised land was to be a set-apart place for a set-apart people to bless the earth. And then about 475 years after God said that to Abram, Joshua takes the people of Israel into that land. It happens. It took some time, but they got there. And just before they do, God gives Joshua a little pep talk. God's pep talks are always a mixed bag. I don't know if you've ever received a pep talk from God, but it's usually not just a pat on the back. There's usually some challenge that exists inside it. And this is how he says it to Joshua. No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. That's pretty sweet. Just as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. That sounds great. I will not leave you or forsake you. That's super helpful. Be strong and courageous, for you shall cause this people to inherit the land that I swore to their fathers to give them. That's a lot of pressure, a lot of stuff on my shoulders, but okay, you're going to be with me. Only be strong and very courageous. And here's where it gets challenging. Being careful to do according to all the law that Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or the left, that you may have good success wherever you go. The book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do according to all that is written in it. That is hard to do. That is not a simple task. That is not a simple requirement of Joshua. God could have said, and Moses, try, or and Joshua, just try your best to learn what the law says and try to stick to it. It's not what he says. He says, the law shall not depart from your mouth. You shall meditate on it day and night. That is a lot. That is how God tells Joshua to lead the people of Israel into the land that he promised them. Here's the truth. We can't do that. We're not capable. Joshua wasn't capable. The people of Israel weren't capable. The judges that led Israel after him weren't capable. The kings that led him after that weren't capable. The high priests weren't capable. Nobody did that. Moses didn't do it. Joshua didn't do it. Nobody did it. We are not capable of doing this. Joshua was given the task of fulfilling the promise of God. He was given the task of fulfilling that promise where he said, you shall cause this people to inherit the land. That was God telling Joshua, I'm giving this job to you. Israel was not handed an empty land bursting at the seams with food, water, and shelter. It was a land filled with enemies of God, including giants and cities with giant walls. But they were guided by God through Joshua to victory over their enemies, so that if they trusted Yahweh and obeyed his word, they would be given all that God promised them. If they trusted and did as God told them, they could be sanctified. Because God is the Lord who makes holy. Yahweh Makadesh. And we can surrender to that work of holiness, or we can resist it. And as Joshua kept going in Jericho, Yahweh continued that work of sanctification by leveling the most heavily fortified city in all the promised land. He did not provide them with siege work towers. He didn't teach them how to make flaming arrows. He didn't teach them how to tunnel under the wall. He didn't give them a large bomb of gunpowder led by an orc with a flaming torch. I got Lord of the Rings in there. You didn't think I could do it. I did it. It was, you know, I wrote this down because I just thought I should put it out there. On June 11th at 10:35 a.m., Charlie referenced Lord of the Rings. I remember because I was sitting right there and I was like, oh my gosh, I took out my phone and I wrote it down because I knew that was a momentous occasion. Nobody else cared. I cared. It is important to note that the people of Israel in this did not just sit back and watch Yahweh do this. When we look at the story of the Battle of Jericho, you can't even, I don't know why we call it the Battle of Jericho. There was no battle because God decided we don't need to do a battle. We're not going to do the battle thing here. I'm going to just bring the walls down. And the guys are like, all right, well, what do you want us to do? And I was like, here's an idea. Can you march and then blow trumpets and scream? And they're like, I guess. And they do. And it worked. He did not have them be spectators. He did not have them just sit in the audience. He had them as active participants, just not in the way they expected, not in the way they would have wanted. But over and over throughout that story of Joshua bringing the people into the land of Canaan, into the promised land, Yahweh continually shows up and did as he promised. He made the sun stand still. He shook the earth. He constantly defeated the enemies of God for the sake of the set apart people, because Yahweh Makadesh is the one who sanctifies, not us. 40 years before this Jericho stuff and before Israel was given their set-apart place, Yahweh met Moses on a mountain. And while they were there for 40 days, God instructed Moses in all the ways of sanctification, the law, the priests, the tabernacle, the Ark of the Covenant, and all the work to be done to make them. And at the end of that time, Yahweh gave Moses one final thing, one final piece of information, and this is important. This is the very first time God uses this name of Yahweh Makadesh in Exodus 31, verses 12 and 13. The Lord said to Moses, you are to speak to the people of Israel and say, I'm going to try something. I'm going to see if you guys can fill in the blank here. Above all, you shall keep what?
My law.
My law? Good guess. Wrong. That would make sense. He's sort of summing up everything. He's saying, above all, you shall keep my blank. For this is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I, the Lord, sanctify you. What do you think that blank is? I feel like I might have heard it over here. Yeah. Above all, you shall keep my Sabbaths. Above all. Not, oh, and by the way, I forgot to mention this. Above all, you shall keep my Sabbaths. For this is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that Yahweh Makadesh, that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you. I'm going to put a little pin in that. We're going to come back to it. Because see, Yahweh's plan was to give Moses this law and bring it down there and say, this is how I'm going to do it. However, the people had a different plan. They wanted to rejoin that herd. They didn't want to be set apart. They didn't want to be sanctified. What they wanted to do was have the benefits of holiness without the work of being set apart. In Exodus 32, 1 through 6, when the people saw that Moses delayed to come down from the mountain, the people gathered themselves together to Aaron and said to him, up, make us gods who shall go before us. As for this Moses, this man who brought us up out of the land, we don't know where he went. So Aaron said, all right, give me your rings of gold that are in the ears of your wives, your sons, and your daughters, and bring them to me. So they took all the rings of gold that were in their ears and brought them to Aaron, and he received the gold from their hand and fashioned it into a golden calf and said to the people, these are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt. When Aaron saw this, he built an altar before it, and Aaron made a proclamation and said, tomorrow shall be a feast to Yahweh. It's important to note that before this, he was not using the word Yahweh when he was using gods. He was saying Elohim, which is just the standard word for gods. Here, he is saying, we are going to praise Yahweh by praising this cow. And they rose up early the next day and offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings, and the people sat down to eat and drink and play. Yahweh, God, tries to set us apart, and we try to join the herd. Egypt and the people surrounding the Israelites were doing things this way. They would worship and honor their gods by building things and praying and singing and sacrificing to those things that they'd made. And see, the people of Israel had been slaves for a long time. And the only thing that you can measure a slave by is what they do, what they can make, what they can build, what they can give you. And they are still dealing with that trauma in their hearts. And this is how they chose to deal with it. The problem is that Yahweh had a very, very different idea. Yahweh's plan was to break them of that, to break them of that idea that the only way that I can be valuable, the only way that I can be made holy is by doing something, is by measuring the quality of my output, building something beautiful and letting that be what I worship. God had a different plan. Yahweh promised to mark Israel as holy by what they didn't do, by how well they could rest and trust in him. You see, the Sabbath is the perfect example of this. It is the perfect example of being set apart. Because there was nobody doing this. Nobody on the planet had a Sabbath. People rested. That's not really what Sabbath fully is. It's not just chilling out. There's a great deal more to it. In fact, Delin, our pastor to women here, sent me this from a book she's reading, and I absolutely love it because I think it explains it so well. It says, the Jewish people refer to the Sabbath as the queen. And the word sanctify has the meaning of betrothal. We are betrothed to the queen of our hearts. And we are to prepare our homes for her arrival. We are to welcome her and to anticipate her arrival as the fulfillment of our deepest yearning. To call Sabbath bride is merely to allude to the fact that its spirit is a reality we meet rather than an empty span of time which we choose to set aside for comfort or recuperation. Sabbath is at the heart of sanctification. Above all, you shall keep my Sabbath so that the world will know that I sanctify you. It is not about your output. It's not about what you can produce. It's not about what you can make. It's not about how great you are. It's not about how smart you are. It is truly about how well you can stop and rest and trust in who God is. The very first time we even see the word Kadesh, not the Lord who sanctifies, the very time we see the word holy, sanctified, is about Sabbath. Genesis 2, verse 3, God says, Yahweh blessed the seventh day and made it holy. That's the word. Because on it Yahweh rested from his work and all that he had done in creation. Sabbath sets us apart. Stopping, resting, waiting, listening sets us apart. See, Sabbath is a sign that you're no longer a slave. Sabbath is a sign that you are no longer part of the herd, but you are set apart to be in relationship. Sabbath also does take work, just not the work you would expect. It takes work to prepare. The Israelites, when they were going into Sabbath, they had to do extra work the day before. They had to prepare everything. It took time. It took effort so they could stop and wait and allow God to sanctify them in the stopping and the waiting. God wants us to very much understand the idea that sanctification cannot be earned, that holiness cannot be earned, it cannot be taken. We cannot, like Eve, look and see that it is good, reach out and take it for ourselves. We can't do that. God has to give it to us. He has to hand it to us. Dallas Willard says it this way: grace is not opposed to effort, it is opposed to earning. Israel could not earn sanctification by making or doing anything. They were sanctified by their ability to stop, trust, and follow God's way for them. I want to read you two other passages here, one from Isaiah and one from 1 Thessalonians. Isaiah 42, 16 says this, "And I will lead the blind in a way that they do not know. In paths that they have not known, I will guide them. I will turn the darkness before them into light, the rough places into level ground. These are things I do, and I do not forsake them." 1 Thessalonians 5, 23, 24. Paul is wrapping up this letter and he says, "May the God of peace himself sanctify you completely. And may your whole spirit and soul and body be kept blameless at the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ. He who calls you is faithful. He will surely do it. These are the things I do, and I do not forsake them." Yahweh is the one who sanctifies. It is his great work on this planet to set apart those who desperately want to be a part of the herd. And we, his followers, we have to stop. We have to trust. We have to follow so that we can be sanctified, made holy, set apart. You have a part to play in this. It's just not the part you think. It's just not the part that you expect. And here's a question that we haven't asked yet. Why? Why set us apart in the first place? Why do this? Why not just let us have the benefits of holiness without having to be set apart? Why put us in harm's way? Yahweh told Abraham that he would set him apart so that they could be a blessing to the world. Eventually, though, Abraham's descendants walked away from that. They rejected Yahweh's way and found their own. So God took that land from them and gave it to somebody else, all the while promising that we would one day make all things new. And then one day he did. And just like Israel was guided by Yahweh, who worked through Joshua, whose name in Hebrew is Yeshua, to deliver on the promises of sanctification for Israel, we are guided by Yahweh, who works through Jesus, whose name, by the way, is Yeshua, to deliver on his promises of sanctification for the world. And now he works through us. We need to be sanctified and set apart so that God can do the work for the world through us. He desires to sanctify us, to set us apart, because we can't do it ourselves. Peter calls us a royal priesthood. He calls us a royal priesthood because the priests and the kings were the set apart people among the set apart. And now we are both of those things. Royal kings and queens, anointed by the power of the Holy Spirit, ready to set apart ourselves so that the world can be set apart with us and be blessed. This is the work of God in your life. This is who Yahweh Makadesh is. And you and I can be a part of it. And so, my friends, as receivers of this mercy, as a royal priesthood, let us stand together now. Let us stand together and mightily worship Yahweh Makadesh, the Lord who sanctifies us.